This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Next, we're going to talk with three young men just back from New Orleans, serving as volunteers with Common Ground Relief.
Drop me off in New Orleans!
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Clearly, anthropologist Margaret Mead was commenting on humanity's saving grace, the very grace that will slowly but surely bring New Orleans back to life, our sense of community, or as the French call it, esprit de corps. Turns out, it is primarily community spirit that is ever so slowly lifting Gulf Coast victims out of desolation. A year after Katrina, more than 113,000 families are living in FEMA-provided trailers, and those folks are only allowed to speak with a member of the press if a FEMA representative is present. 80% of New Orleans was flooded, in some areas under nearly 20 feet of polluted water. Along the coast, 81,000 regional businesses were slammed, causing the loss of some 450,000 jobs. A year later, only $44 billion of promised federal funds have been spent, and most observers would say wasted. Only two-thirds of the trash on New Orleans streets have been picked up. 60% of the habitable homes have electricity. Only half of the city's hospitals have reopened, and just over 60% of the public schools are open. But where government agencies have failed miserably, a grassroots group, Common Ground Collective, the brainchild of community leader Malik Rahim, who started out with three volunteers and $50 and began by opening a medical clinic the week after the storm in the Algiers neighborhood, have grown to 40 full-time organizers with hundreds of volunteers giving out short-term relief and planning for sustainable long-term support. Solidarity, not charity. Our producer, Michael Jones, talked with three returning Common Ground volunteers from Ossining, New York, Mike McGee, Justin Drobinski, and Tom O'Connor.
Today we have with us three outstanding young men who actually went down to Louisiana where they volunteered to work with some of the survivors. And they're here to tell us their firsthand accounts of how bad it was and hopefully talk a little bit about what the youth of today think about volunteering and activism in general. We're here with Mike McGee, age 20, Tom O'Connor, age 19, and Justin Drobinski, age 19 as well, and they're all from Ossining, New York. I'd like to ask you guys to begin with, given the fact that many seem to think that American youth are just more interested in their iPods than helping humanity, what caused you to want to go down to Katrina? What caused you to act?
Well, when Katrina struck for me, it was clear, even before I knew the full facts of the situation, that Katrina wasn't a natural disaster. Katrina was an artificially created, huge violation of African-American human rights. It's a government injustice. It's not a natural disaster. And for me, seeing the images in the news media following Katrina, I felt so powerless against something that I consider to be truly evil. You know, and I hate to just start off so off the bat hostile, but I mean, I'm a little frustrated with the way that this event has been portrayed. It wasn't a natural disaster. It was human arrogance towards the suffering of others.
And having been brought up in America, were you accustomed to thinking that it was going to be different?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, it doesn't feel like America, even when you're down in the Lower Ninth Ward. Now it feels like you're in a third world country. You know, you have to deal with a lot of problems of a third world country. Inadequate water, little to no health care, dangerous living conditions, toxic living conditions, police and military harassment, you know, helicopters patrolling the neighborhood, all these things in an American city.
And what was the organization that gave you entree into Katrina and the spectacle of that disaster? It was called CommonGround.org. If you could please talk a little bit about what they do.
Well, Common Ground Relief, the best description that I've heard of it isn't so much that it's an organization, is that it's a movement with a bank account. It got started directly in the wake of Katrina by Malik Rahim, who is a former Green Party city senate candidate. He was a New Orleans Black Panther in the 1960s and 1970s. You know, the Black Panther organization in New Orleans did a ton for human rights. And in the wake of Katrina, he basically just got started in his backyard. He was like, hey, the government is not doing what it should be doing. We don't have the basic things that we need. Let's get them, you know. So he just started handing out free food from his backyard, setting up internet, you know. And he started handing out food. And that's basically how this organization got started. And more people showed up and were like, hey, let's get a health clinic going. Let's start gutting people's houses. Let's do this. Let's do that. And less than a year later, it is what it is.
And when you first arrived in New Orleans, where did they put you? I mean, did you get right on the ground and start handing out medicine and first aid and food, or was there a training process?
Right now, the main volunteer center for Common Ground is located in the Upper Ninth Ward, and it's a former Catholic school called St. Mary of the Angels. Father Bart has graciously loaned it to the group. It's a three-story converted Catholic grade school, gutted out, all the gym floors are pulled up, anything that could contain poisonous black mold removed. And then it's very minimal housing arrangements, army cots in classrooms. I slept on a box spring covered in a garbage bag for 6 weeks, okay. You know. No AC. The water in the Ninth Ward is still pretty toxic and pretty dangerous. You know, problems with parasites and heavy metals. So the living arrangements are very much on the front line, and there are 160 people.
How long after the hurricane had struck did you arrive?
9-10 months.
And what was the most common complaint you heard from the actual victims? Was it the speed of the recovery time? Was it the fact that they had been ignored?
There wasn't really any complaining. It was just a sharing of their story. It was just accepting what happened and talking to us about the hardships that they had, the lack of help that they had from people, fear of abandonment and feeling of abandonment. The third floor of the school was where a lot of the residents went when the Ninth Ward flooded, and upstairs in the rooms where actually we were sleeping, there was messages written on the chalkboards like they left us here to die, things like that. But while I was down there, at least, there was never anyone complaining about everything that happened.
When they say that they left us here to die, that's very interesting. Who do they perceive as the they? Who are they blaming for this catastrophe?
Well, you have the full spectrum of support. I mean, it's very hard to generalize about the entire view of the Ninth Ward. People are just upset primarily at the federal government to varying degrees. Some people are upset that the National Guard is fighting the wrong crimes, you know what I mean? And then that ranges to the full spectrum of some people are upset for the government creating the tragedy in the first place, because look at how the levees broke, which caused the majority of the destruction in New Orleans.
If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World, and we're speaking with Mike McGee, Justin Drobinski, and Tom O'Connor.
Well, how did this trip nearly change you? Did you come back with different attitudes than you had before you went, or were your suspicions pretty much confirmed?
Well, I've been talking to Mike on the phone when he first went down for a few weeks, and he's the one who convinced me to go down, that I had to see it for myself, that it was unbelievable.
What exactly was unbelievable?
The conditions. There's garbage on the street. The first day I was there, I saw a car upside down, rusted through, that had probably been there since the storm, in the middle of the street. And their houses, you know, in shambles. The military presence was really sort of scary. And so I came back, I guess, a little more cynical, a little more conscious of what the government's doing, sort of the greater desire to get out there and find out what else is wrong with this country or in these little pockets that sort of keep peeking up.
And how do your peers feel about what you've done? Are they equally interested in finding out what happened down there? Do they view what you did to be heroic or commonplace?
I've gotten a lot of compliments and praise for what I've done, which I don't really feel that deserving of because I was only there for 2 weeks. Mike was there for 6. Other people have been there for months and months. I was really just a small part. But, I mean, I've had all different reactions. I've convinced a couple of people to look into Common Ground just by telling them what I saw. They got really interested, wanted to go and help. Other people had no idea what was going on. They were shocked. Others still just didn't believe what I was saying, didn't think it was possible, didn't believe that the government would do that.
Do you sense a sea change in the attitudes and the indifference amongst many young people today?
Going down there has just taught me one thing. There are as many differences in people our age as there are people 30 years old and 40 years old. It just depends on where you were brought up, the things you believe in.
And for this generation, what are the big issues that you see coming up in your future that you're going to have to fight for? In our ancestors' past, it was racism or the suffrage movement. What is the next one going to be?
Racism.
Racism is still around.
It's still around. It's ingrained in our society in ways that most people are unwilling or unable to see. Like, race and class relations in this country, I think, are going to be huge simply because the gap between the rich and the poor has been widening. And we are entering a service economy, you know. The middle class, the blue-collar jobs that used to provide the means to the American dream are gone. and we have a president waging a ridiculous, open-ended war on an ideology, you know? I mean, I think that class and race are still going to be the huge issues in this country.
What is the solution? Is your generation even more tolerant than the last generation? Because it's supposed to be. In theory, each generation is supposed to be more tolerant and more open-minded.
It's not so much the age. It's where you come from.
And so when you were in New Orleans, the attitudes of the people you met down there, a lot of that depended on their origins.
Yeah.
About how they perceived the government, their upbringing, and their background of the given part of the country they're from.
Right.
And when you were seen as being New Yorkers, were people receptive to that? Were you accepted as just people wanting to help?
The people down there were very accepting of any help. They figured that anyone who was willing to go and volunteer their time to live in such a hostile environment and come away from, you know, a place where it's more safe, specifically for me up here in New York, they were really thankful for it. And they weren't quick at all to jump on me about being from New York and being a little bit more privileged than the people down there. They weren't quick to jump on that at all. They were just appreciative.
Do you think that most of the youth today actually feel powerless, that all the things you've mentioned that are plaguing this country, they're pretty serious issues? And maybe many times it's actually easier just to live a personal life involving material things. Do you sense a feeling of just what can we do, a hopelessness amongst the youth, or do things like this Katrina volunteer service change that?
Well, I know I personally felt powerless until I went down there. And what I realized is that the youth that are active right now really need to realize that you're not going to affect any sort of major political change until you're willing to make true sacrifices of yourself, you know. And waving a sign in a protest where you have a permit and just sort of, you know, like, angrily going, we want the war to end. Well, there's another one tomorrow that's going to be like, we want the war to happen, you know. Or, you know, pro-life, you know, pro-choice. Like, all these rallies just cancel each other out. People really need to be willing to make the true sacrifices for what they believe in. And when you do that, you have the moral high ground and you have power.
We vote and we pay our taxes. When the people we've hired to protect and defend us don't live up to their part of the bargain, what should we do? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Rita J. King, Mike McGee, Justin Drobinski, and Tom O'Connor are just some of the voices of our world. I'm your host, Eileen Bott, and this week's show was produced by Kathy Golden. You heard music today by Harry Connick Jr. with Kim Burrell and Kermit Ruffins. We'd also like to thank investigative reporter Greg Pallast. 100% of the earnings from Harry Connick's song, All These People, will go to New Orleans Habitat Musicians Village. More info about that song is available on our website, www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can also listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please check it out. Go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll, or to try Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.